Hi, this is Rick, and I want to welcome you to Affair Recovery Radio, Radio to the Power of God. This evening, due to the fact that it is the weekend of one of our emergency marital seminars, no staff will be present, so please don't call in. However, we will be, according to our normal tradition, playing the story of the mentor couple that came and shared this weekend with our couples. If, by the way, you're listening to this tonight and you're one of the couples that joined us over the weekend, thank you so much for letting us be a part of your lives. Guys, it was an absolute blessing to watch your courage as you began to face your issues and the things that began to happen in each of your lives. We are just honored that you would allow us to be a part of your healing process. I mean, what a blessing for us. But tonight, what you're actually going to hear is a story that was told by Greg and Lori. Now, Greg and Lori actually attended one of our EMS seminars about 2 years ago. And they're going to share how they got to the point of coming to our EMS seminar and what God has done since that point in time over the past 2 years. God bless you, and we'll see you next week.
Welcome. My name's Greg, and this is my wife, Lori. And we're not public speakers. We don't do this on a regular basis. We're just two people who sat in your chair almost 2 years ago. Tell you just briefly a little bit about myself. I was born and raised in a Christian home. Grew up in the church. Everything was great. And I tended to hang around older kids for whatever reason. Looking back, I'm not exactly sure what my parents are thinking now that we're parents, but hung around kids that were 3-4 years older than me. And Rick, I don't know if you can flash up the first picture, but I want to show you a picture. The main reason why I'm showing you all that picture is because that's when a friend of mine introduced me to my first Playboy magazine. And that was, I'm 38, so that was 28 years ago. And I can still, right now, vividly tell you exactly what that very first image was. And for the next 25 years, pornography was my thing. Some people struggle with alcohol, smoke, drink, premarital sex. I didn't do any of those things. My thing was porn. And during that time, obviously my parents didn't know about it. Nobody knew about it. And for nearly 25 years, they still didn't know about it. And I think with that, I'll turn it over to Lori, and you can say a little bit about your childhood.
Unfortunately, I don't have a picture of me when I was 10. But while Greg was looking at porn, probably at the age of 10, I probably didn't know anything about what the opposite sex looked like without any clothes on. Very protective childhood and sheltered. And it's interesting because even when I got married, the night before I got married, the one thing that my mom said to me was, "Lori, is there anything you want to know?" But at that time, at the age of 21, it was a little too late for her to ask that question. So I think that it's interesting, and the reason why we show that picture is, you know, you don't necessarily think that your life is going to be altered at the age of 10. And for Greg, when he started looking at porn, I don't think that he ever envisioned what exactly it would do to his life and what it would do to his future wife, being me, or to our marriage, or to our children. But Greg's story actually began at the age of 10.
And so all through high school, there was just the magazines and this and that, you know, going to church, being in the youth group, et cetera, et cetera. One of the things that I think is really neat and why we like this type of environment here is the fact that there are programs, there are things available to where if you get caught into something, there's people that you can go and talk to and to get help. At this particular age, I'm still convinced that, and I'll share a little bit later too when I talked to someone at church, but I was convinced at this age that if I had gone to my youth pastor, you know, he would have kicked me out of the church, told me I'm the only one with the problem, etc. And so it remained a secret. And As Lori mentioned, my definition of sex, was totally skewed in the sense that the next picture, the whole way up.
Sorry, Rick.
I'm sorry. I could have done that. The whole way up until, I have this problem. No one knows about it, not even my parents. And, met Lori, still was a virgin, I was the better guy. I wasn't drinking. I wasn't smoking. Of course, all the things that people see and say, oh, that guy's got a problem. Everyone thought that I had it all together. And I thought, once we get married, this porn problem will go away. Because sex, after all, in God's eyes, is okay. That's what he intended it for. And it didn't, as Lori will say.
Although that was, almost 16 years ago, on my wedding day, I thought that I was marrying the man of my dreams. I thought that he was a godly man, that he was caring, that he was strong, that he was prayerful, that he would put me sometimes, most of the time, maybe before himself. I thought that we had it all together, but actually on our wedding night, I realized just how intense of a man I was marrying. And that started on the night of our honeymoon when it came for us to have our first sexual encounter.
During this time, I'm in the military, still am in the military, and for those of you that have ever been in the military, porn is huge. It's everywhere. It's on the ships. It's on subs. And so, I'm just the typical, Popeye the Sailor Man. And, Lori doesn't know anything about this. My parents don't know anything. And the best thing that ever happened to me in my addiction was the invention of the internet. Because, I used to have a Volkswagen Rabbit, and on the back of it had one of the little Jesus fishes. And the reason why I'm telling you this is because I was living a double life. I always have, up until 3 years ago. I would park a mile away from the adult bookstore because I had this little Jesus symbol in the back of my car, and would walk, the back alleys, et cetera, just to go and buy some porn or drive, to a truck stop or whatever the case is. I mean, it was just absolutely insane. But with the internet, Lauren could be sleeping, the kids could be tucked into bed, and no one knew. When I would go over to to my in-laws, to her parents, again, just spend hours, get up at 2 in the morning just to get my fix, if you will. So it really consumed me. That was the extent. I know some people ask, how bad did you go or whatever the case is. That was really the, I wasn't into prostitution or anything like that. Mine strictly stayed to pornography. And as Lori just mentioned, and of course everyone here, no one ever thought that, if someone were to ask you, one day are you going to commit an affair and cheat on your spouse, the answer would be no, not me. I never, and like all of you, never ever thought that that would ever happen. But as Lori mentioned, all this stems back to when I was 10. That first image, it just progressively got worse and worse and worse until in 2002, we had moved to Austin. We'd been bouncing all over the place, and we moved to Austin. I actually got out of the military, but I was active reserve. September 11th happened. And in January of 2002, I got recalled, and I went to Bahrain for 18 months. I was gone for 18 months. And while I was over there, again, still looking at porn and all that kind of stuff, and I happened to run into someone that I knew, a female, from a different drill unit, and she was only there for 2 weeks. And it started out as a simple phone call, to her hotel room, which then led to dinner. And then the next thing in my mind, all the justification, et cetera, Lori's back at home, I'm all by myself, no sex, poor me, et cetera. the next thing you know, we ended up in her hotel room. And of course, she was leaving. She was only there for 2 weeks, and I thought that was the end of it.
Keep going.
And then just tap.
You're good.
And then so what started out as a one-night stand that I thought no one would ever find out about, no one would ever knew or know about, all of a sudden became a total obsession to me. That was in March of 2002, and all through that time, we kept, it was phone sex, it was instant messaging sex. We just continued to talk. And now she was someone who she was divorced, a single mom, much older than me. And looking back, I think it was more or less she was a motherly figure. And anyway, of course, the sex was just fantastic, this and that. And in my mind, I'm thinking, okay, this is great. Lori doesn't do this, and for whatever reason, I couldn't stop. And the strange thing is, she ended up getting recalled to the same place where I was at over in the Middle East, and she ended up staying there for 8 months. And of course, I was there. So for the next 8 months, once she got there, we lived together. Believe it or not. Now, a little history with that. I was jeopardizing my career, and still don't exactly know what the full consequences are going to be. But she was enlisted. I was an officer, which is a big, huge no-no in the military. And here we are on a tiny little island in the middle of the Middle East, and I'm just having the time of my life. And quite frankly, it was fun. And but sin only lasts for a season. I came home for 2 weeks during that time frame, and let me pick it up from there.
He came home during those 2 weeks, but it was pretty easy to lie. It was pretty convenient. It wasn't a typical affair where you had to meet after work or meet on the weekends. He was able to live day in and day out. Basically, they acted like a married couple, except they didn't have children in the background, and they didn't have to worry about bills and money, and they didn't have to worry about the real life. They were able to, basically, they couldn't be seen together, so they spent day in and day out having sex. And that's how he spent his life. But when he came home for those 2 weeks, I don't remember there being anything different, anything strange, anything out of the ordinary. He continued to send emails. We continued to talk on the phone. He definitely led a double life, because I had no idea. And of course, in my own mind, my husband would never do this. So,
fast forwarding it a little bit, I came back, got off the IA, and what I had done is since I was gone so long, and since September 11th happened, we made the decision together that I come back on active duty. So from there, I moved to Mississippi, and Lori and the kids were here in Austin. It made sense. Of course, she didn't know what was going on behind the scenes, but it just made sense from the financial standpoint, because we still have a house here, and if anyone has a house, I'll throw that out there, or needs a house, come talk to us afterwards. We're trying to get rid of it. But but it just made sense. The kids were already in school, and looking ahead, I knew in 6 months I'd be going to Iraq on deployment. And I'm in Mississippi, she's here, and of course that just allowed me to just continue this affair, because in Stacy's eyes, that was my adulteress. In her eyes, once I came back from Bahrain, I'd been lying to her too, telling her that I was getting a divorce. That's how I got her in bed to begin with. I'm getting divorced, this and this. And all through that entire 18 months, 17 months or so, she was under the impression that when I came back, the papers were filed and we were going to go off and live happily ever after. And like Lori said, there were no kids, there was no money. It was a fantasy world. And so anyway, came back, moved to Mississippi, and throughout that time, continued to see her unbeknownst to Lori when I would fly in or drive in from Mississippi up here to Austin. I remember one particular time I was going back, and you know, just called her and said, man, I broke down and, you know, I didn't make it back because, you know, it takes 8 hours and I didn't get back. Well, you know, here I am spending the weekend in San Antonio, which is where she lived. And just lie after lie after lie. But the point in saying all that is that, you know, the affair and the relationship continued to strengthen, if you will. And as always, I continued to ride the fence. When I was with Lori and the kids, I mean, she was the best thing. And then I was able to turn it right off and, of course, see my adulteress. In March of 2004, go ahead.
But while he came home and went to Mississippi, I began to have little snippets. Just that wifely, something's not quite right. He left a man that wanted sex all the time, day in and day out. And any kind of touch, any kind of look meant sex. And so during those, before he left to go to Iraq, I just started to sense that something was wrong. But during those 18 months that Greg was gone, God started to work on my heart. Our whole 12 years of marriage, I had put Greg up on a huge pedestal. I wanted Greg to fulfill all of my needs, all of my wants, all of my desires. And I didn't look to anybody else. It was just Greg's role to try to do that for me. And because we moved quite often, you know, it was hard to make friends initially. It was hard to, you know, we left family. So I turned to Greg more and more and more. But during those 18 months that Greg was gone, I was kind of out from underneath Greg's wings. Besides the fact that he was basically a sex maniac, is the way that I can only describe it. He was also very controlling and manipulative, and I allowed him to do that. He would say to me, well, Lori, if you were better in the bedroom, then I would be happier, I would be better. If you cooked more, I would be happier. If you cleaned more, I would, you know, be more fulfilled. And I just kind of bought into all of that, that any kind of issues that we had in our marriage were somehow my fault. And the way in which I dealt with that pressure was to eat, hence turned my addiction to food. And so I would drown out my pain and my sorrow by eating. And so, back to March of when Greg, or when I discovered, I had asked Greg point blank, you know, what's going on? What are you doing? Why don't you want sex anymore? Why are you late? Why do you not want to come home? You know, I asked him all the normal, typical questions, and he would look me eyeball to eyeball, face to face, and say, nothing's going on. And I just kind of accepted that, even though I knew in my gut that something was going on. But I'd asked him, what else more do you do? So my prayer became, okay, God, I've asked him, you know, you're just going to have to reveal it to me. I can't do any more. And it's amazing to me how God answers prayers. But I didn't know that 3 days later that my prayer would be answered. And Greg had been gone for so long, there really wasn't anything for me to check. But all of a sudden, I thought, wait a minute, he came back, he has a cell phone, let me check the cell phone records. And sure enough, that's how I discovered that Greg was having an affair. Of course, the problem then became is that he's in the middle of Fallujah, Iraq. And so, do I confront him on the phone? Do I send him an email? You know, what exactly do I do? So, of course, how do you keep that in when you're just devastated? So I did confront him over the phone, and he did deny it. For quite a while, he denied it. And I fished around for as much information as I could. I had a friend that's really good on the computer. She started getting phone numbers and checking all the phone numbers, doing all the normal checking stuff. And so Greg was discovered.
Of course, it doesn't help. Well, let me go back to something Lori said. I was very manipulative. I knew at the same time Lori was very codependent, and I used that to my advantage. I knew I could twist the stories. I knew how to lie. I mean, looking back at it, I was really good at it. And I think that's something with a sex addict or someone who experiences problems with pornography or something along those lines. I mean, it is, they're habitual liars. I can look at someone today and we can have discussions and I can see, you know, if they're dealing with that particular type of issue, you know, sort of get a good idea of whether or not the truth is coming out or not. But anyway, so I used all that to my advantage. And of course, it doesn't also help. Again, sin will find you out. I booked a cruise for Stacy and I when I was coming back from Iraq, and you know, Lori gets the
itinerary
in the mail. The other thing
I also had gotten a magazine in the mail, and I was like, we don't get this magazine. It was a catalog, actually, and so I started thinking, So I called the company and I said, what was the last thing that was ordered? And they told me that it was perfume, and I said, well, where was it shipped to? Because I knew that I didn't get any perfume. And sure enough, they told me the address, and then they started to kind of catch on to what I was doing. But it is interesting, Greg no longer, I mean, things were just starting to be revealed. I didn't have to search anymore, and I truly believe that God will bring the darkness to light. It's just a matter of time. So I will say, just to throw this in real quick, because I thought it was interesting, but I sent a letter to Greg right after I found out about the perfume, and I said, I'm waiting. I said, I think that my birthday perfume was sent to the wrong address. And so he did email me back and was quite ugly about it, but it just proved, I did get a sense of relief in this in a negative way, but it didn't change the situation.
Well, and we just got through talking a little bit about anger. Of course, my anger just went through the roof because, you know, I was discovered. I couldn't deny it anymore. But at the same time, everything up until this point, everything was about me. I was the firstborn. You know, my parents still to this day, even though they know our story and what I did and all those kind of things. But, you know, they put me on a pedestal. Lori put me on the pedestal. I mean, I was it. And so when I was discovered, initially, like Lori said, I denied it. But once again, you know, just looking back at it, it's just really amazing because just the bondage, just the, you know, what is she going to do? What am I going to say? Because she knew by then she was enlisted. She knew I was an officer. And I mean, all you got to do is make a phone call and I'm out of there. And so, you know, just trying to play it. Well, from my adulterous standpoint, again, I was just keeping her, you know, she was very codependent. There's some things in her background, et cetera, that made that very easy. But, you know, I kept dangling the carrot in front of her. Yeah, okay. You know, I am getting a divorce, you know, because a year had already gone by, almost 2 years had gone by, and I still wasn't divorced. We were still married. I still hadn't left. But I kept throwing that out there because that relationship was all about sex. I mean, every chance I got, I was in San Antonio, even if it was for an hour or two. I mean, it was just sex. I mean, that's really the whole point of that relationship. And I used her in the other direction, like I was using Lori, and just the manipulation. Well, came back in August of 2004 and came home to a homecoming, and I just treated Lori like crap. I don't know why or how she stayed with me as long as she did, because I mean, I was mean. I mean, I was just ugly. The one thing I regret not doing is she kept all the emails that I sent, and every now and then when we're doing things or whatever, it's not going back to the historical that we talked about. It's going back, and I'm like, I really said that? I mean it was just ugly. And so I came back, and sure enough, like 3 weeks later, because it was Labor Day weekend, we got into a fight, and I left, I don't know, it was somewhere in the late in the evening. But anyway, I drove the 9 hours to San Antonio, and I spent the weekend with my adulteress. And of course, Lori knew at that point exactly where I went. I mean, I told her on the way. She begged and begged and begged that I come home. And I said, no, I mean, this is it. This is it. So what happened while I was gone? Want to tell them about the kids?
Yeah, well, you know, at this point you may say, well, why did Lori stay? When I found out about the fair, we were supposed to meet back up in Mississippi, and I know that it's complicated. So the kids and I moved to Mississippi because our children had not had a father for 18 months. And I was like, you can leave me, Greg, but our children need you. And I was bound and determined to keep him held accountable, at least for our children's sake. So we did meet back up in Mississippi and began the whole process of working through things. But the amazing thing is during those 18 months, God prepared me for finding out about Greg's affair. I didn't know when Greg left whether or not I loved Greg. I didn't know if I loved myself when Greg left, because Greg told me that he didn't love me, that I didn't cook enough, I didn't clean enough, I didn't have sex good enough. I just didn't do anything right for Greg, nothing. And so when I found out about the affair, and because he was in Iraq, I had to say, if Greg dies, or Greg had an affair, which is worse? And there literally were times throughout all of this when I did think, if Greg had died, it would have been easier. I could at least explain that to our children. I didn't have to, you know, explain any of the other issues. And so there were times when I did think that him dying would have just been easier to deal with. So when he came back, we did have a lot to work through, and it was a difficult time. But when Greg left for that weekend, I had already, before we left Austin, I had already filed for divorce. At that particular time, Greg was saying, don't move, I don't want you, I'm going to leave you, I'm going to divorce you. And through the advice of my attorney, he had recommended to go ahead and file for divorce, but not to have papers served for Greg. And I did that basically out of fear, which Rick talked earlier about. If Greg had come back and moved to Mississippi and filed for divorce, I was going to have to get an attorney there, and it just kind of got totally complicated. So I did file for papers. So when Greg left that weekend, the first thing I did was get on the phone with my attorney, and I thought for sure, without a shadow of a doubt, that we were done and that Greg was going to go to his affair partner. I thought for sure that that's what was going to happen. But when he came back, I had the doors locked. And basically, I had a note on the door, and I said, you know, we'll meet you across the street at the park, but you're not going to come in. I had told Greg that it was his responsibility to explain to our children why he had left. And so our children wouldn't talk to Greg. They were, I don't know, 9 and 5 at the time, 6 at the time. They wouldn't talk to Greg. They wouldn't sit on his lap. They wouldn't look at him. They walked around like this. Now, keep in mind that I didn't tell them everything, but they woke up at 7 o'clock in the morning, and I had, what do you tell? Well, where's Daddy? What do you say? What do you tell? I mean, you can only protect your children from so much, and then you're just left to put it in God's hands and just to say, okay, God, I can only say so much. And I tried to keep as much as I could from them. But at the same time, I knew that I couldn't allow Greg to come back into our lives and keep doing the yo-yo thing. I want you, I don't want you. You're important to me, you're not important to me. I want the kids, I don't want the kids. I mean, it just was insane. The beautiful part about it is that our son Reagan, God really used Reagan to speak to Greg. And he's very perceptive and asked Greg a lot of questions once he finally got over the mad part. And Greg, I think, realized the pain and suffering that he was causing Reagan and Addie, which are our children, but not enough to 100% change his heart.
Yeah, when I came back, of course, like Lori said, there was a note on the door, and I actually had to spend the night in a hotel, and it ticked me off, because like we don't have money to begin with, and now I got to pay for a hotel room. And I remember calling Stacy and saying, yeah, I'm in a hotel room, and she's like, you idiot. I mean, what do you expect? I mean, she just knows that you ran off with me, et cetera, et cetera. I mean, but it's just, again, I wasn't thinking clearly, and it was that constant struggle. I mean, D deep down inside, I actually loved Lori. She was the love of my life. I loved our kids. But on the other hand, this addiction was overwhelming, just consuming me. I was still in denial, by the way, all up through this. But, you know, I was riding the fence every single time. I mean, when I wanted the family and the stability, I reached out to them. When I wanted nothing but the sex and the fun and the fantasy, of course, she was there. And we were sitting on a swing, and he just made the comment. He said, you know, Dad, something to the effect like married men don't cheat on, or dads don't cheat on their moms in marriage, or something along those lines. And then he looked down and he said, why aren't you wearing your wedding ring? I mean, he was, like you said, 9 years old. And, you know, it killed me, but I still couldn't give her up. And so I went to the church and found, you know, we weren't going to church at the time. And, well, we were, but it was on and off. And I went and found this worship minister and just cried my heart out to him. And Lori even verified it. And yes, he's sincere. Again, I mean, those of us stuck in this kind of thing are just excellent liars. And, you know, I just had everyone fooled. Going ahead a few more months, we ended up going to another deployment over to Japan. Lori and I continued to live together. In fact, we went on a cruise together with my boss. I mean, I had everyone fooled. Lori accepted me back with some conditions. You know, I saw the pastor. We started going to church. But then, you know, it was right back to normal. Again, she didn't know, but while she was gone, you know, I would be looking at the internet, looking at the porn from work, be constantly in contact with my adulteress. And so then I went on another deployment to Japan in 2005. And while I was over there, the room that I had, the guy, you know, he said, hey, I got you all hooked up. He had the refrigerator stocked with beer, and he had all kinds of magazines in there for me. And so again, the mind just starts going. And up until that time with my adulteress, it would be an on and off thing. And over the combined total of 2 years, I mean, I'd go 4 or 5 months without even talking to her. I mean, it was over, it was off. Didn't want anything to do with it. I was reading my Bible, I was back into church. You know, I was trying my hardest. Everything was on my own. I was trying on my own to fix this problem. Because I didn't like it. I mean, if you could pay me a dollar for every time I tried to quit viewing porn or not buying it or looking at a magazine, I mean, I'd be a millionaire today, because it was just those many times I was just caught in that cycle. So with her, I mean, again, you know, I turn it on, turn it off, turn it on, turn it off. Well, it was off, went on deployment, and right before I came back, I turned it back on, the phone sex, etc. Hey, I'm coming back. This time it's for real. Lori and the kids were in Mississippi, and I had orders to go up to Rhode Island, so they packed up everything. You know, I'm over in Japan, packed up everything, and met me up in Rhode Island. Well, I had a decision to make, because after all these years, Stacy, she was like, okay, this is now or never, because I'm leaving, don't ever call me again. When I went to Rhode Island, I went with the whole intent that, you know, my anger built up, you know, my self-centeredness, it's all about me. You know, her kids are fine because they're divorced and they made it. You know, David and Bathsheba in the Bible. I mean, King David is a man after God's own heart. I mean, I came up with all these different things. Jimmy Swaggart. I mean, I was trying to rationalize everything. I mean, these people made it. And you know what? God really wanted this marriage. And, you know, looking back on Lori, you know, blah, 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 blah. So it's crazy what the mind will do. And so I met her in Rhode Island. And again, she didn't know. But when I went running and all that, I'd be on the phone with Stacy. And yeah, this is it. This is it. And on August 5th, of 2005, 3 weeks after Lori and the kids moved there, and I had just returned, I believe I flew in July 31st. But anyway, a few days later, on the 5th of August, I was just mean for those 4 or 5 days. And, you know, I had to be. The more angry I became, the easier it was for me to make this decision. Because if there was any feeling in it, you know, I would still be on the fence. Well, this time was it. And I told her, I said, Lori, I said, you know, I've decided that I'm going to move out. I'm going to find an apartment. And we're just going to try the separation thing. We'll both live in Rhode Island. That way I'll be able to see the kids, see how they adjust, etc. And then a year later, because I was only there, it's going to school for a year. Then a year later, you guys can go back to Texas or whatever. And, you know, the kids are fine and life will go on. And we'll just get a divorce and be done with it. And then Lori threw me for a whammy.
And I tried to control all of Greg's behavior initially. I sent him books, I sent him tapes, family members sent him letters confronting him. I did everything that I humanly knew to do to Greg, for his eyeballs to open up, for him to recognize what he was doing to me, what he was doing to his children, and even what he was doing to himself. But when he came home and we had just moved another 1,500 miles, and he said he was moving out, within a second, all of a sudden I just had the most inner peace that I have ever had or experienced in my whole life. And I said, don't bother, because the kids and I are not staying. And that was it. There was no more talking, there was no more crying, there was no more anger, there was no more bitterness. I was done. And for the first time, that was so freeing to me, because there wasn't anything else for Lori to do. I had said everything that I could say. And so Greg, I think, was so stunned that he didn't know what to say. He didn't really say anything. And he went his way, and I went my way. And I basically then made 4 phone calls. I called my parents and told them that I was leaving. I called Greg's parents and told him what he had done again and that I was leaving. I called the friends that I had made while Greg was on deployment back in Austin, and I said, I'm leaving. I need a place to stay. Can I stay with you for a while? And then I called the kids' school and said, you know, I'm looking for a job. I need to support me and the kids. And is there any way that the kids can come back to school there? They've always been in a private school. And I had been a stay-at-home mom basically our whole married life had been a stay-at-home mom. And so at that particular time, within 24 hours of all of those phone calls, of course, my parents said, well, what are you going to do with all your stuff? How are you going to get here? What are you going to do? And I said, it doesn't matter. None of the stuff in this house matters. I'm just going to leave it here. The friends said, sure, stay here as long as you can. And they had just completed a guest house, which is a miracle in itself. And the school called me and they said, we have a teaching job for you and you're going to make $24,000. And we'll give you tuition for your children. And so all of the issues that should have totally weighed me down, God just took care of all of them. All that was left was for Greg to tell our children what he was doing.
Lori, one of the things that she made me do is she made me tell the kids that I was leaving. And that it was, you know, it was my fault. I've chosen to get a divorce and to separate. And so we sat down on the couch and our 9-year-old, or 10, I don't know what, how old, 10 at that time, he immediately went to his room and he grabbed his bat. And, I mean, this is someone who, you never ever see any anger in him, you never ever, he doesn't get upset or anything like that. And, he chased me around the house with that bat. And, but even, you know, through all that, it was still all about me. And I watched Lori pack our van with what, you know, I didn't lift a finger. I didn't ask if she needed any help. I didn't do anything. I mean, I was just mean. And So they left, and I came back, and, you know, part of me was like, man, I hope that they're still there. But I knew this time when Lori told me she's leaving, that really, I think, was the start of my recovery, because she took away all control. Because all these other years, it was me. I manipulated her. I lied to her. You know, I could get around it. This time, there was no way that that was going to happen. I mean, she set some boundaries, and she now took control of the situation, if you will, and took it away from me. So, of course, I come home, and, I mean, I'm just devastated because everything in the house was there, their toys, their bikes. This was the first time we lived in the Northeast. It was supposed to be snowing. It was supposed to be ski time. Supposed to be all these things. And but that was the first time where I knew I needed help. Because the one thing that I forgot to mention, the whole 8 months that I was living with my affair partner, I kid you not, I mean, we were having sex every single day. I mean, but I was also running up hundreds and hundreds of dollars on the internet looking at porn at the same time. And I say that to say that here I had, you know, what I thought I was looking for, I had, but at the same time, I was still searching and looking for porn. And when she left, I knew that I was still going to go down the road, that I was getting a divorce, I was still going to move in with Stacy and get married. But I knew that before any of that could happen, I have a porn problem and I got to address it. So I started, I went to counseling, which was a first, because even through our entire marriage, we didn't go to counseling for porn, but we went to four different counselors, but it was always at Lori's request. This is the first time that I ever said to myself, and actually did it, hey, I was going to go to a counselor. I went to a counselor. I went to what they call Sexaholics Anonymous, much like AA. But when I was there, we talked a little bit about it earlier, talking about higher power. I mean, a higher power could have been a doorknob, and I knew exactly who the higher power was, and I was like, there's got to be something better out there. And then a friend introduced me to a program called Celebrate Recovery, and someone in here mentioned that earlier. And so I went to this church, and for 3 or 4 weeks, I didn't say why I was there. Because I just knew that if I told someone that I had a porn problem, they would throw me out. And so it became safe, and anyway, I said this is why I was there, and then during that time, I also found out, well, actually, I knew about SA, I knew about the other program called Every Man's Battle by Steve Arterburn, and it's a weekend conference for those that deal with sexual addiction. I knew all about that way back in Mississippi, but once again, I didn't have the problem. It was all Lori. If she just gave me good enough sex, if she just looked better, if she just cooked better, cleaned better, etc. It was all about her. I didn't have the problem. So I didn't go, but at this particular time, I signed up for that. I actually was supposed to come to an EMS weekend, and I called Lori and I said, no. I said, I gotta fix me. I gotta fix me first. Now, of course, you know, I didn't tell her that the reason why I was going, I had to fix me so I can get this divorce and move on with this other person, but on November 5th, and I mean, that's only 2 years ago, I was totally broken. It started in August. Totally broken. I knew I had a problem. I knew I had to become man enough to accept that I had a problem and recognize that I had a problem. And driving 8 hours to Pennsylvania on November 5th, I said, God, I've tried to do this all on my own. I've tried for many, many years to quit. My marriage, I'm throwing away two beautiful kids, a beautiful wife. This is not what I want. And I said, it can only be you. And I mean, just spent money we didn't have, because at the time we were maintaining three different homes. And it was just devastating. And then in January of 2006, Lori and I flew down here. I flew down here because we were still separated. Flew down here and we went to EMS. And that's where, you know, sitting in the same room like this, I mean, I know you guys, it was done a little bit differently when we did it, but this seminar, this weekend, beyond a shadow of a doubt, is what saved our marriage. Sure, there were some steps and coming out of denial that I had to do first. But as far as we sat where you're at on a Friday night, and we heard another couple just like us say that there's hope. And going back to EMB, I mean, there was a guy who who struggled with porn for all these years, but, you know, he was over it. He was leading a ministry, and, you know, here's another couple here a couple months later saying that their marriage survived, that it's a lot better. And
right before Greg had gone to the Everyman's Battle workshop, I was pretty much done. I mean, the papers were already filed. As I said, it was just kind of a matter of time before Greg was going to be served. I was seeing Leslie at that time, and fortunately for me and for Greg and for our children, you know, she was able to help me navigate through a lot of my feelings and emotions, and I was able to somewhat stay grounded. There was one particular weekend that Greg came to visit, and he had led me on again to think that he still wanted our marriage to work. And he came to our, but at that time we had moved into an apartment, and he came to the door and he didn't have his wedding ring on. And I think that was another time when I confronted Greg, which I didn't do a whole lot, in an angry kind of way. I wasn't the plate thrower. I wasn't the slam the doors, the screamer. I internalized it a lot more. So when he came, I basically was like, okay, what does this mean? You say you want me, but you come without your wedding ring on. You know, what exactly does it mean? And he was supposed to be there earlier, a couple hours earlier, and he didn't show up. And of course, our kids were like, well, where's Daddy? He was supposed to be here. In the back of my mind, I had a feeling that he had flown into Austin and then had gone down to see Stacy. I didn't confront him at that time because, in reality, it just didn't matter. His words didn't mean anything. He wasn't showing me any respect. I was done. And so that weekend, I had made sure that I had a counseling appointment with Leslie the Monday after. And her words to me were, well, why don't you call Greg and ask him what he wants? And I said, I know what he wants. And she said, what? And I said, well, he wants out. He's done. And Leslie said, then maybe it's time. And it was just there again, that peace that, you're right, it's done, and it's okay. It's okay. I've done everything. Whether our marriage survived, whether our marriage didn't survive, God had shown me over and over and over again that he was going to provide for me. And that was just a huge blessing. And it was at that particular time, yes, Greg went to the Everyman's Battle, and yes, he made some steps, but I didn't believe anything he said. I mean, it didn't matter. I just didn't trust him at all. It didn't matter what he said. So he did start to do all of those things. He was reading his Bible, although I wasn't in the house to see it. I didn't see him going to church. I heard about it. But he started to follow up his words with actions. And that was the beginning of the process for me. I didn't know where we were going to end up. And I did a lot of listening, not a lot of talking. But through the EMS weekend, I would say that that was a determining factor for us as to whether or not there was anything left to salvage. I knew in my heart of hearts that God could heal our marriage. I knew that beyond a shadow of a doubt. But I also knew that I wasn't willing to sit by and allow Greg to continue to do what he was doing. And so our EMS weekend, I believe, put us months and months and months ahead of where we would have been. And I think the fabulous thing about you guys being here is the fact that, you know, you're searching, you're looking deep within yourselves and you're looking towards your mate. And I love that I think Rick had said it earlier too, that, you know, we're for so long I looked for Greg to make me happy. And something else that Leslie said to me was, you know, what's the purpose of marriage? For years and years and years, I thought, well, I'm supposed to make Greg happy, and he's supposed to make me happy, and we'll all be happy together. Mm-hmm. So then, after several steps, and what else did you do?
Well, I was just going to say that, you know, for those of you who did betray your spouse, there has to be action. And Lori, you know, I did it for me, but then, you know, it was for her. And I mean, it's there's still accountability twice a week. You know, I believe that every man needs to have an accountability partner, whether you have a problem or not. It's just to keep and prevent you from having a problem. But I just want to share something else real quick. And the beauty of all this is I can sit here and tell you, and Lori can affirm it, our sex life is incredible now. The transparency in our relationship. I mean, for the first time, there is no bondage. There's no more porn. There hasn't been. We're able to talk to you about it. We're able to stand in front of a church and talk about it. And people don't talk about it, but it is an issue. It is a problem. But Lori and I mean, you know, we're two individuals. We're living in the same household. We got the finances. We got work. We got all these other things. We have marital problems. Don't get me wrong. There's communication problems and all that. But because of this, you know, God turned what could have been a tragedy into a triumph. And, you know, I look back at even at Rick, Leslie, and Wayne, Stephanie, and all them. I mean, had they not told their story, none of us would be here tonight. And so I encourage you, you know, I don't know what God has in your life and you know, how your marriage is going to turn out or whatever. But the one thing that I can say is, you know, for me, once I let it go and turn it over to God, and I heard that for so many years before, and I was like, you know what, I'm about ready to throw up on that. But that's why that song, Walking by Faith, it took a lot of faith, because I was at the bottom saying, I have done everything I can. But if you notice, it was me. I did everything. But once I said, you know, God, it's up to you. Only you can restore me. Only you can salvage this marriage. Things started clicking, and I can't explain it. I mean, even today, the fact that we were asked to come here, I mean, that was never ever in the picture. Never ever could I imagine. So I hope, from what you heard, and I know you want to close it, but I hope that, you know, what you heard and what you saw tonight are just two people that were sitting exactly where you were, who came in here hopeless, who came in here thinking that, you know, there's no way that it could ever happen to me. And, you know, the other thing, too, I didn't, you know, I would never, ever say that I wish this would happen to anyone else. I certainly wouldn't want it to happen to Lori again. But I tell you, to see where I was in that picture and to see where I'm at now, I mean, it's amazing what God has done. The freedom is just unbelievable. And it just all starts, I think, with coming out of denial, accepting responsibility, and taking some actions.
Well, obviously, we did get back together. We were separated for 9 months, and in May of 2005, the kids and I flew back to Rhode Island, and we were there for a couple of weeks, and then we made our next military move to Fort Worth, which is where 2006, which is where we are now. And I think for me, I don't, like Greg said, we don't wish this upon anybody. But when I look at the person who I was, and then I look at the person that I am now, I am grateful, because God did use just a screwed up situation to bring glory to himself. And we don't wish it upon anybody. You know, we are better. I'm a better mother, a better wife, a better friend, the whole way around. And you know, it is painful. Do I like the fact that Greg had an affair? No, I don't like that at all. Is there any guarantee that it won't happen again? There's not a guarantee. I know that Greg is doing everything in his power to ensure that that doesn't happen. In his words and his actions, show me his true heart. My prayer became, show me Greg's heart, reveal Greg's heart to me. And that's all I could pray, because there is no guarantee. But I do know that whatever happens, that God will sustain me.
Well, guys, that concludes our program tonight. Thank you for joining us. I do hope that you have enjoyed listening to Greg and Lori and experiencing what they've gone through and maybe learned from them in the same way that all of us did. We really believe that Greg and Lori are another example of the incredible miracle of what God can do. I mean, trust me, guys, if Greg and Lori can go to the place where they've been, where they are all the way split up, and God is still able to bring them back, please know that there really is nothing the nearness of God cannot heal. I mean, it is astounding that a couple like this is able to come back together. So if you're listening tonight and you think there is no way that we can come back from where we've been, I just want you to know that almost 90% of the couples we work with who believe that actually end up staying together. Please do not lose hope. I just hope you guys have a really good week. And if you have any questions, please feel free to give us a call at Affair Recovery Radio. We can be reached at area code 512-346-9299. That's 512-346-9299. And again, we're starting a new online Affair Recovery course. You can find that on our website. It's affairrecovery.com. That's affairrecovery.com, and you can register for the course there. God bless you, and I hope you guys have a great week.